Are you starting to like get that jitter, get that buzz? We're 1 week away, everybody. Hello, everybody. Happy Thursday. Actually, Wednesday, April 17th. The reason why I thought it was Thursday is because I wrote my mock draft, which will be published on Thursday. So happy Wednesday.
Hump day.
April 17th, 2024. For your daily Steelers talk on the South Side Beat, as we do Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on DK Pittsburgh Sports. He's Chris Halleck. I'm Corey Christen. We are 8 days away from NFL Draft 2024 up in Detroit, Michigan. However, I will be along with DK on the South Side to cover the Steelers happenings. What's up, Chris?
Oh, nothing much, man. Actually, just as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, we usually don't, you know, like we usually don't, and a lot of outlets don't actually go cover the draft in person.
Right.
But maybe in a couple seasons, maybe a couple years.
Yeah.
Maybe the Steelers end up winning themselves a draft, and the draft will be in, you know, in Pittsburgh, maybe 2026. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting, man. That'll be a fun little dynamic there where like, we've probably got like two guys on the South Side, you know, taking care of the actual stuff. And then we got one guy over, you know, at wherever the draft's being held, you know, to possibly get interview with whoever's the draft pick on night one or anything like that. But anyway,
talk to the fans or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's funny you mentioned that. So if Duquesne didn't make the NCAA tournament, I was going to, DK doesn't know this, but if he's listening, he's finding out now. I was going to pitch to him. Basically the NCAA tournament played first and second round games in Pittsburgh, at PPG Paints Arena. So I was going to pitch, so to speak, to cover, you know, the tournament coming back. John Calipari, obviously Moon Township guy, coaching Kentucky, who played in Pittsburgh. Now, that whole thing, that was the Oakland upset. That happened at PPG Paints Arena. But I was going to lobby to cover, as like locally, you know, fan interest in basketball. I know City of Pittsburgh's putting some money into researching whether the NBA could be supported, which by the way, the hat I have on right now, my Cavaliers versus the Magic this week. That's going to be a tough one. But anyway, football. Yes, the NFL draft potentially coming to Pittsburgh within the next couple weeks. But 8 days from today, it will be in Detroit. And 8 days from today, DK and I will be on the South Side figuring out what the Steelers are doing at pick 20. Now, I'm going to have a mock draft published tomorrow. Full first-round mock draft, just like I did last year, picks 1 through 32. Of course, including what the Steelers do at 20. And I tried to make the board shake out as fair as I possibly could. So you'll see all of that tomorrow. But today we're talking about what the Steelers could potentially do in day two. And a position of interest that we kind of teased towards the end of yesterday's show, if you'd listened, was linebacker. Now, the Steelers obviously made a splash signing in the offseason by bringing in Patrick Queen to play at off-ball linebacker to go along with Atlanta Robertson, Cole Holcomb, and Mark Robinson. But over the last couple of days, two really prominent names have visited the South Side. That being Peyton Wilson out of NC State and now Junior Colson out of Michigan. Wilson visited yesterday and Colson visited today. And both of those guys are day two caliber linebackers that the Steelers have really done a lot of homework on. Peyton Wilson, for those that don't know, is the brother of Bryce Wilson, the former Pirates reliever. So certainly a familiarity with Pittsburgh within that family. But they're still looking at the linebacker position, including by using two of those top 30 visits on them. So that position's not a total wrap as we sit here 8 days away from the draft. And to me, the fact that they're looking at these two guys so late in this process is another intriguing fact about it.
Well, again, similar to the tackle position, the Steelers, you know, when you go into the draft, you have to think about beyond 2024. You have to think beyond what contributions these players are going to make in their rookie seasons. You have to think about year two, year three, year four, you know, and when you look at Landon Roberts and Cole Holcomb, I believe both of them are going into the last year of years of their contract. Maybe Cole Holcomb has 2 years left. I think he might've signed a 3-year deal. But either way, you know, Atlanta Roberts, I think, signed a 2-year deal. So he's probably going into last year. And then even if Holcomb has 2 years left, you know, obviously you have some concern about, you know, injuries and stuff like that. And so I think it's a position in which it's certainly not one of the more pressing needs. Obviously, you look at center, you look at tackle, you look at cornerback, you look at even probably defensive line, but linebacker is still one of those ones in which if the board falls the right way, maybe the Steelers go ahead and take a guy, you know, put a young guy that could play next to Patrick Queen, you know, or at least learn from him. Again, this is just the Steelers doing their due diligence. I saw some comments, by the way. Apparently we say due diligence too much, but doing their homework, doing just all the work that they need to do to be as prepared as possible for a number of draft scenarios. And, you know, linebacker is a position which they can definitely add to that room. I don't think that's a room that you could just – it's not the running back room where we got Najee Harris, Jalen Warren, Cordarrelle Patterson. Like, okay, we're good to go. You know, I think linebacker is still one of those ones in which you're like, okay, we can if the right guy falls to us at the right spot in the draft, yeah, let's go ahead and get this guy.
So, Landon Roberts is 29 years old. I'm looking up the age of Cole Holcomb right now. I believe he's in his mid 20s, but I have to 27. So late 20s, I guess. So, like, Holcomb still got some years left. Obviously, coming off of a serious knee injury is one thing. But having a Landon Roberts and Cole Holcomb there, you know, to go along with Patrick Queen, who's still, I think, 24, like, they're kind of set at that linebacker position. But here's the thing about that. There's two things. Number one, if one of these guys slips into day three and there's value at day three, like Colson or Edrin Cooper, or I don't think Trotter or Wilson would fall that far.
Probably not.
But if there's value in the fourth round, maybe fifth round at linebacker, why not at this stage, given the contract situations? I believe Holcomb has 2 years left and Roberts has one without looking it up right now.
Well, I think about it this way. Like, you go back to like the defenses in the mid to late 2000s, you know, they had James Ferrier and Larry Foote, like solid duo. Not that Larry Foote was necessarily like that much of a dude, but he was a solid player. And then they still draft Lawrence Timmons. And then all of a sudden they've got three guys who can all play in the middle of the defense. I understand James Ferrier was getting up there in age, and Larry Foote, again, a guy who, you know, you can still afford to add to the room. But, you know, for a couple seasons, man, they had like a trio. Now, obviously they played in their base 3-4 a lot more often back then, but this is still a position in which, hey, if you're in a slugfest with the Ravens who like to run the football, you'd love to be able to roll out a trio of, you know, Patrick Queen, Landon Roberts, Cole Holcomb, or if Holcomb isn't available, you know, Queen, Roberts, and day two draft pick, or early day three draft pick, or whoever else. It's still a position in which you can add more to it. And as long as you're not leaving somebody else at a position of greater need, like an equal player, I think adding a linebacker in the draft is not a bad way to go.
How do you think they're viewing that second, third round pick that they got from the Kenny Pickett trade? Like, to me, it's obviously an asset, right? It's a very big, important asset. It's a top 100 pick that they got for nothing. I mean, like, Kenny Pickett's something, obviously, but they were going to get rid of him anyway in some capacity, it feels like, especially after the Fields thing, you know, transpired. So, like, you have to think that they have this third round pick and they're kind of playing with a little bit of house money with respect to that. Now, I'm not saying they're going to automatically trade it away or they're automatically just going to burn it on somebody that they really want. But also at the same time, that second third round pick can be used as commodity one way or another. Like, okay, Mark brings up here, Edrin Cooper possibly in three. Does that open up another opportunity to take a linebacker, which at this point is not a pressing position of need, but down the road, when you think about, again, Holcomb's injury history, Roberts getting to age 30 with the contract situation coming up, getting some depth behind Patrick Queen, and again, with Mark Robinson not really developing like they thought he would, even though he got seventh round pick, made a position conversion. Like, I don't think it would hurt to look at that, especially if there's value there with that second pick in the third round. Although, like you said, if there's an equally talented player, but at a position of need, you address the position of need first.
Yeah, I would think that ideally the Steelers don't part with any of their first four picks. I think if they can do whatever they need to do to get whoever they want to get with holding on to their first, their second, and both of their thirds, that's ideally what they're going to do. Now, I know that's something like, okay, thank you, Captain Obvious, but you know, obviously, you know, if a situation, you know, comes up in the first round in which you want to trade up three or four spots to get a tackle you really want to get, like Fuaga or Faltano or whoever else falls to 16, and you can make a, you know, make a move up, you know, that requires you parting with something, you know, in order to do that. And so that's what I, that's more or less what I mean whenever I'm saying, I think their preference is to hold on to all four of those picks instead of having to use one of them to possibly trade up in, you know, first round, second round, whatever it is. That being said, I don't think that Omar Khan or Andy Weidel or whoever else is so, so stubborn to the point of being like, hey, you know, we have really good intel that Zach Frazier is not going to fall past. I'm throwing out a number here. I don't know exactly the teams that are, but let's say he's, we have intel that if so-and-so is on the clock at 46, Frazier's not moving past that. So let's trade up seven spots or six spots to get in front of him, because we really want Zach Frazier, and it requires that 98th pick in order to move up. I don't think that they're so like, okay, yeah, we can't do that. I think if they could work out a trade in which they don't have to part with that, they would rather do that. But I think if they have a guy, that's the one thing that I remember from last year, you know, when you know, we were asking about, you know, why trade up for Broderick Jones, is like, this is a guy we wanted. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about the fact of, like, we wanted to trade up because we liked the pool of players that were there at 14 as opposed to what, where we were at 17. It was, no, Broderick Jones fell to 14. We're not, we know he's not going to go past 15.
We need him now.
We're going to go get him because this is the guy we want. And that could be a similar situation in the first round, whether it's a tackle that they really want. Could be the same situation in the second round if they really want Frazier. You don't know what's going on there. And I think that's why when Omar Khan is going through all these things and he's wheeling and dealing and he's making trades or whatever, he's going to add the most amount of capital he possibly can, whether that be players, whether that be draft picks, no matter what it is, so that he has the flexibility to be able to move. And if they pinpoint a guy that they want, they have the necessary capital to be able to make something work.
I see a scenario where the board falls to them in the first round, and then they're so high on Zach Frazier that they get aggressive and potentially use that second, third round pick to move up. I see that as a potential. Like the capital they got from the Justin Fields and Kenny Pickett trades, like I feel like there's opportunity to move up if they're so high on one of these guys. We talked, you know, about like the high interest in Zach Frazier, the high interest in offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. And if they feel so strongly about Frazier and they believe that he could start center day one, then they're going to have to make a move out of 51. 51, he's not going to last to 51. So with that said, like, do you trade 51 and 98 to move up 10 spots? Whatever it is, that's maybe super aggressive. But at the least, last year we learned that Omar Khan's willing to get aggressive if there's a player they really want.
Yeah, number one, I'm not going to sit here and try to say I know exactly how the board's going to fall. None of us really know. People who have the best idea are the guys who are operating the draft, who are preparing the war rooms for the 32 teams.
Right,
and they're the ones who are gathering intel on which teams are high on this guy, which teams are, you know, pinpoint, especially when you obviously right now the main focus is going to be first round, you know, and the Steelers are going to they're going to lay out a number of different scenarios in which, okay, this player falls to this spot, maybe what we can, you know, be trade up for this. And, or if we don't trade up at all, you know, we're at 20 and, you know, there's, you know, what are all the options that we have on the table? And, you know, all these teams are gathering intel on not only these players, but on what the other teams are thinking about doing. And so that's why I'm thinking, like, that's why I think, like, when people are trying to project where Zach Frazier is going to fall or where he's going to go, I think that's why, like, when you talk about anywhere between like 35 and 55, like, that sounds like a gigantic gap. You're like, oh, yeah, that's like the good portion of the entire second round. It's like, yeah, but I think it's that up in the air because a lot of people might be really high on him because they really like him as a center. But, you know, I even got questions like every time it seems like there's a center that everybody loves, some, like, a lot of the times it seems like that guy just falls and falls and falls.
Yeah.
And it's just because center is not the most sought after position in the draft.
Yep.
It's just not. I'm not saying it's not an important position on the football field, but in the draft, tackles way more prioritized. Cornerback, receiver, like, there's just a number of different positions that are way, and obviously quarterback. I don't even have to say that one.
Yeah.
But there's just so many different positions that are given a higher priority, especially early in the earlier rounds, in which, just by that reason alone, center just falls and falls and falls and falls and falls.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily know. Like, again, I think what Omar Khan wants to do is he wants to be as loaded with draft capital as possible, so that in case of a situation where, whether it's Frazier or whether it's anybody else, that they have like it, they have a feeling in the second round, like, hey, there's a guy we might want to go get. We didn't have to use any of that capital to do anything in the first round. Maybe there's a guy we can pinpoint, trade up, and go get in the second.
Mm-hmm. Like, okay, Reginald says, why not trade down to 27 and get Frazier problem
That's
solved?
Way too early.
Not only is it way too early, but I can't see Omar Khan moving that far back if they move back. I can't see that happening.
Way too early for Frazier.
You'll see in my mock draft tomorrow, the way the board fell and the way I did it, it did not spoil too much. Like, the teams that need offensive linemen and defensive linemen don't start picking really until about 14. Like, the Titans, spoiler, I have the Titans taking Joe Alt at 7, like, because taking a tackle there just makes a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm.
But then I don't have another tackle going until 14. And it feels like the way the draft is orchestrated and organized right now, the way that the board is going, the order that teams are picking, it's almost as if there's not going to be a significant run of offensive linemen until the second half of the first round. That's what I read through in my draft prep. That's what I deduced in my draft prep. Like, I think the first half of the first round is going to be loaded with quarterbacks and skill position, and then a couple defenders mixed in. And the second half of the first round is going to be really loaded in the trenches. Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, with a couple, I think, cornerbacks and a couple more wide receivers mixed in. Like, I have a feeling that the Steelers are right now in a cluster of teams that are really heavily needing offensive linemen. So with that said, if they, let's say it's Talese Fuaga, okay, who you're high on, Chris, I'm high on as well. We both can agree that he should not be there at 20. If the Steelers are so high on him like they were on Broderick Jones, they have to get aggressive again. They have to. There's no option here. Like, it's very unlikely that he falls to 20. So with that said, does that second pick in the third round come into play? Or they could sit back and wait for some of those guys to fall off, and then they can kind of have their pick of the litter between, let's say it's Latham or maybe even Fuaga or Fatanu or Mims or any of those guys that, or Barton or Powers Johnson or whoever it is in the first round that they're so high on. Like, to me, I think it kind of depends on how that draft board shakes out with respect to what they do at 20, but also two positions of need that they have, wide receiver and offensive line. This is a really deep draft for those two positions. So even if they address something different at 20, they're kind of coiled and ready to strike in that second round if they really want to dump off that 98th pick and move up from 51 in a significant way to get someone like a Zach Frazier.
Yeah. A couple things here that I wanted to address. You know, we've been Matthew asked, trade back, yay or nay. I'm trying to answer this from the perspective of what I think the Steelers are eyeing, not what I think they should do. And anything that I say really on here, unless I really start that with me personally, I want or I like or anything like that, I'm trying to give you guys the perspective of what the Steelers are thinking, what the Steelers want. Based off of what the Steelers are prioritizing, which is tackle, I don't see a trade back scenario if I think the only way that, that a trade back scenario actually plays out, unless their priorities have changed on the south side, and like I said, unless that happens, I think the only way that they trade back is if all the tackles that they wanted at 20 are gone, mm-hmm. and they weren't able to trade up. And I'm talking about like Fuaga, Faltano, Fashanu, Alt, Latham, Mims, like all those guys, all those tackles are gone. They weren't able to trade up and get one of them or whatever. They get to 20 and they're like, okay, maybe let's trade back and go after a Powers Johnson or a Graham Barton or whoever else. Maybe at that point that to me is the only trade back scenario that I can see. And then there was something else and I wanted to kick it to you on this one too. Hold on. Let's see. Really quick, because you're doing a mock draft, but I wanted to get my perspective here. That's Beat asks, you know, have either of you watched enough or researched enough to put together a first round draft board? Like I can put together a draft board. It'd probably take me a couple hours to put it together, but just because I have done a good amount of homework on just about everybody in the first like 50 or 60. But I would rather try to do mock drafts, not for the point of, hey, mock drafts are cool and they're popular, but like do a mock draft to try to lay out draft scenarios for your favorite team, for what the Steelers could be doing, either trading up, standing pat at 20 or trading back. And I think that's why mock drafts are so interesting, because when they're done right, they can help create and explain a bunch of different scenarios so that when next Thursday night comes, a week from tomorrow night comes, it can kind of give you some background. Okay. Talese Fuaga's there at 15. Maybe the Steelers trade up here. Like maybe they can, you know, maybe that's on your radar, so that if that does end up happening, you're like, hey, Chris and Corey talked about that. Because, you know, Chris and Corey, hey, they said the Steelers loved Fuaga. Now Fuaga goes at 10. We'll never know.
But that still explains that, hey, maybe the Steelers love Fuaga and he's so good that he goes 10. Like, but, all right, here's a mini spoiler, okay? Another one. I'm not going to spoil my whole thing. I didn't do any trades in this mock draft. I took the board as it is and I did it as it is. Now, that being said, there are two teams, Minnesota at 11 and Denver at 12, that are not going to be picked. One of those teams is not going to be picking in that spot. And what I mean by that is those are two quarterback depraved teams that need to move up, not should move up. They need to move up. And what that means is getting into the top four or five to get one of Drake May, Jane Daniels, or JJ McCarthy. Is JJ McCarthy worthy of being the fifth pick in the draft? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But is he certainly worthwhile for Minnesota and or Denver to get in a bidding war over to go get? Absolutely. And again, another spoiler, you'll see JJ McCarthy get taken by Minnesota in my draft at 11. Now, that's not going to be the pick. If one of those two teams takes McCarthy, they're going to have to move up to get him because they're going to be in a bidding war over it. There are multiple teams that are going to want another quarterback. And it's the teams that are starving for quarterbacks are picking top three with Chicago, Washington, and New England. They're starving for quarterbacks. It's just so conventional that the draft really doesn't start, quote unquote, until pick four. Yeah. It's just a matter of how those three organize, which Caleb Williams is going to go number one. So how does Drake May, Jane Daniels fall out between two and three? Or does New England or Washington prioritize McCarthy so high that either of them go at two? JJ McCarthy going two or three would throw the whole draft off, because then that starts the bidding war between Denver and Minnesota to move up to four to get either Daniels or May. So like that's a whole wild card in and of itself. But like you look at teams that are starving to do that kind of thing. If the Steelers feel, and I loop it back to the Steelers here, if the Steelers are so strong, like they were about Broderick Jones last year, and they know it's a case in point study. And they know, for example, that the Saints at 14 are really high on Fuaga, and the Saints are going to pick Fuaga, and they have to have Fuaga. They have to make a move to 13, which I forget who 13 is right now off the top of my head. But regardless, they would have to get aggressive, really aggressive, to move up. And that's where that 89th pick, that second pick in the third round comes into play. If you dangled 89 and 20 for 13, I forget again who's at 13, so I have to go look it up. That team at 13 is probably enticed by it. But also, if they sit back at 20 and they wait back on one of their other guys, and again, they're so high on whether it's Zach Frazier or Braden Fisk or whoever it is in the second round, and they feel so strongly about him, that 89th pick coupled with 51 could get them into the 30s. Like, it's a no-brainer that can get them into the 30s. But they have to feel so strongly about a player to get overly aggressive with that. I'm pitching two scenarios here where the Steelers get overly aggressive to get their guys. And some teams will have to do that. The Steelers, I don't think, are necessarily in a position that they have to do that right now.
Really quick, we're getting near the end of time here. So there was a question I wanted to answer because today was the last day for pre-draft visits, the 30 allotted visits that teams are allowed to have. And popularly dubbed top 30 visits on social media. That's not the official name for them.
Raiders. Thank you, John. Yeah. Thank you, John. Raiders probably aren't taking a tackle. They're probably taking a cornerback, which not to cut you off, Chris, but so if the Raiders see that Terrion Arnold or Kool-Aid McKinstry or maybe even Quinyon Mitchell would fall back. Okay. Maybe the Steelers dangle 89 and 20 to get to 13 and maybe the Raiders take it. You never know. Sorry. Continue. Yeah.
No. So Mike in Texas asked, can you guys tell us what the actual differences between pre-draft visits, combine and pro day visits? So combine visits are literally everybody's at the combine and all the prospects that are invited to the combine are there. They can either have a formal meeting or an informal meeting with team officials. Those formal meetings are for the Steelers are usually with Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan. And then the informal visits are typically with a positional coach. So if it's cornerback, he's probably going to end up meeting with Grady Brown. If it's an offensive lineman, he's probably gonna meet with Pat Meyer, you know, so on and so forth. So that's that visit right there. A pro day visit is literally every college, except for if you're in the Big 12, because now the Big 12 has to have one gigantic one for the entire conference. Mm-hmm. But colleges host what's called a pro day, in which all of their NFL prospects will do workouts, combine-esque workouts, 40-yard dashes, you know, all the cone drills, bench press, all these different things. And they'll work out there, but then team officials then go to that pro day. So for example, if it's a full contingent going, the Steelers did with Georgia and Michigan, it's Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan, Arthur Smith, Terrell Austin, all going to Georgia, to Michigan, like they did, or sometimes it's just one of those guys going, or sometimes it's just Pat Meyer going, or it's one other positional coach going. It just depends on, Andy Weidel could be there. Different scouts could be there. Just team officials can be at a number of different pro days in a number of different ways. And then finally, pre-draft visits is literally those 30 visits you're allowed. It is literally taking a prospect and inviting them to your facility. That way you get to meet with them on your home turf. You get to do your own medicals and stuff like that, and get to see what the player is inside your walls. So that's the three. In case you didn't know, those are the big differences between those three things.
And they're all important for different reasons too. Yes. This whole process with the top 30s, so to speak, that is the most intimate thing. The pro day in the Senior Bowl and at the combine.
Senior Bowl speed dating. I almost don't even count the Senior Bowl. Plus, every player talks with every team at the Senior Bowl, even if it's for 10 seconds.
No, this is true. This is true. But at the same time, there's also a speed dating component to what happens at the combine and what happens at the pro day.
Pro day, they can also take them to dinner too.
It's a little slower, but they're a little slowed down. They're a little more intimate. The top 30 visits are probably the most intimate, where the players get into the building where they could potentially be working. They get to take the whole day to get looked at by the doctors, to talk with the GM, to talk with the head coach, maybe even to talk with a couple of players that are floating around. That is the most intimate thing that is on that list. You talk about that speed dating, it does slow down as the process continues. You got the speed dating at the Senior Bowl, followed by
The combine.
All of the stuff at the combine, which is a little fast, but still kind of slowed down. And then the pro day, it slows down a little more because they get dinner and get to be like in their environment. And then the player gets to go in the team's environment for the whole day. And it's really slowed down. And it's a full process. So, like, I find that fascinating. Like, that's a good question. And I'm glad you answered it that way.
So, a really, really quick, and I think this is a really good thing to focus on here. And this is not just to pump up somebody who does, you know, work for DK Pittsburgh Sports. Dark Donnie says Matt Williams did a great show on the Steelers draft board today.
Yeah.
You want to talk about a guy who knows what he's talking about. Matt Williamson's one of those guys.
Yep.
He knows more than I do. He knows more than Corey does. This dude used to be a pro scout. Dude knows what he's talking about. I think what he does in terms of this is to me is when Matt Williamson shines, because he knows what to look for in terms of certain traits, in terms of certain physical characteristics, in terms of breaking a player down. Like, I feel like I know a good amount, but I've never worked in an NFL front office. I've never been a scout. And when it comes to finding, like, I know certain things that teams look for in players, teams like in players, they don't like in players. You just get that from talking with people on the inside. But I've never actually had to do that, report on that, and help contribute to actual draft process or whatever else like Matt has before, like professionally. So Matt knows that way better than I do, knows that better than Corey. Matt's phenomenal when it comes to that kind of stuff. That's also another reason why I would much rather do mock drafts rather than draft boards, because I am a little, like, admittedly out of my league when it comes to that. Like I said, I could put together a draft board, give you my opinion. But if you were to ask, well, whose opinion should I trust more, yours or Matt's? I'd be like, Matt. 100%. Yeah. Not even a question.
Matt has more knowledge than probably the both of us combined when it comes to that. Like, yes.
Not just, even a question. I've had great conversations with Matt. Matt's phenomenal.
Oh, Matt's great. Matt's great. His draft coverage is top notch. And if you haven't listened to Scout's Eye, make sure you do that. Must listen content. And of course, War Room, when he does publish those, are must reads as well. All right. Quick note. Chris is kind of learning this. I might not be available tomorrow. Depends on when the Penguins locker cleanout is. Because DK and Taylor are both in New York for this meaningless final regular season game for the Penguins. Yeah. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. And then Friday, I will be out for family obligations. So Chris will have you solo Friday. We'll see what happens tomorrow. It depends on what happens with the Penguins. So if I'm not here tomorrow, blame Mike Sullivan. Which I'm sure you want to blame Mike Sullivan for a lot of other stuff, but you can add that to the list. there's a comment at the beginning of the show. Hold on, I want to roll this back. Where is it? Because I was mentioning how, again, my Cleveland Cavaliers. William said wrong side, Corey. Listen, I'm gonna put this hat is old. I love this corduroy. I had to put it on. Listen, big series against the Magic. I think they dispatched the Magic this week. Mavericks are looking good for you.
Who do the Mavericks play? I can't.
Oh, I forget who's in the West. I think it's Phoenix. I could be wrong. It could be Phoenix.
Oh, my God. I hope it's Phoenix. The rivalry between Booker and Doncic is just so good.
Yeah.
The memes alone are phenomenal. I'm excited about that.
I'm looking right now. Clippers.
Okay. You know what? I really want them to dispatch the Clippers too, just because there's some ghosts from playoffs past in here in recent years against the Clippers that I want them to exercise those demons. So
there you go. All right. Well, back to football. We'll do more football tomorrow and Friday, and the day is coming. NFL draft is 8 days away. It's going to be fun. We're looking forward to it, certainly. And DK and I will be on the South Side for it in 8 days' time for whoever the Steelers are going to be picking. He's Chris Halleck. I'm Corey Christen, and this has been the South Side Beat on Wednesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Cheers, everybody. Have a good one.